Sky's Glory, His Divine Story, every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch the vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Sai's Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m.
Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned. Om Shri Sai Ram. Loving salutations at the lotus feet of Bhagwan Shri Satya Sai Baba, the voice, the listener, the heart and soul of Radio Sai. Sai Ram, dear listeners, and welcome to Morning Glory on Thursday Live. You are tuned to our Asia stream coming to you live from Prashanti Nilayam, India, the spiritual capital of the universe. Earlier on, you were tuned live to the Vedam and Bhajans as they were being sung in the Sai Kulwant Hall this morning. We are now back in the studios of Radio Sai. My name is Karuna and I will be your host for this segment called Morning Glory with technical support from audio engineer Brother Sunil. Thank you so much for staying with us on this sacred Thursday, January the 23rd, 2014. The time right now in Prashanti Nilayam is 9:41 a.m. and the current temperature in Prashanti Nilayam is a pleasant 22 degrees Celsius with overnight lows in the late teens and daytime highs in the 30 to 32 degrees Celsius range. Overall, Prashanti Nilayam continues to enjoy delightful weather conditions, bright sunshine, comfortable temperatures and crisp breeze. Nights tend to get a bit nippy by our standards. Overall, this slice of heaven continues to be the place where the mind is calm, the heart is always at home. And here's what else is keeping us so happy and joyful in the abode of supreme peace. Even at the expense of sounding cliched and repetitive, dear brothers and sisters, I have to tell you that life in Prashanti is an ongoing celebration. The sports and cultural meet of Sai schools and colleges this past Sankranti week was simply mesmerizing. Each day, the students of Bhagwan Baba outperformed themselves as they demonstrated their love, talent, creativity, discipline and hard work to glorify their Divine Chancellor. The ashram hosted people from all parts of India who came to witness the spiritual spectacle of the modern Gurukul system that is thriving here. And then we are also home to an international community here, plus the world out there that was digitally connected to Prashanti via Radio Sai's web streaming. Everyone was riveted to the splendor of Sai education. How awesome is that? And the ever grateful team at Radio Sai was working away, setting up video, audio connections to bring you the joy right in your homes wherever you are located in the world. At Radio Sai, we pinch ourselves at our good fortune to be part of this divine mission. For could we ever do anything cooler, smarter or more fun than to be His and to belong to Him? Thank you, dearest God, for including us in your plans. Our lives are filled with your sweet bliss all the time, and we pray that you guide us to share the same inspiration with our listeners effectively. Dear listeners, today at the end of the show, I'm going to share with you something that sounds like a page from Satya Sai Speaks or one of the Vahinis, but you'll be surprised to hear that it's actually coming straight from the Vatican. His Holiness, the Pope, has given wonderful New Year resolutions to Catholics that resonate Baba's message. But before I go to Pope Francis's good advice that can help all of us to improve our lives, I'm happy to tell you that under Tris with Divinity, I will play for you the third and concluding part of an intensely inspiring interview with Mr. Nagesh Dhakappa, the state president of the Sri Satya Sai Seva Organization of Karnataka. And at the bottom of the hour, today you will enjoy the final and concluding parts of my fleeting moments conversation with Ms. Ishwari Rao of Canada. She's a graduate of Baba's Higher Secondary School right here in Prashanti. And now it's time for me to play for you the concluding part of Tris with Divinity, Mr. Dhakappa's journey to Sai's lotus feet. You're listening to Radio Sai Global Harmony, bringing you the message of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. Tryst with Divinity is our weekly series in which we bring you conversations with devotees of Bhagwan Baba from around the globe.
I had a lot of fractures, I had a lot of bruises, and I had breathing problems, but it was Baba, Baba, Baba every day. With every breath, with every step I would take while running, it would be Om Sri Sai Ram.
Well, it actually all started with my mother getting a vision of Swami. This was in 1970 when she was cooking.
There were lots of roses and of course tiny little rosebuds which was nowhere ready to bloom. And he just touched it with his finger.
Mm-hmm.
And just like a movie or a video, right in front of my eyes, you know, this rosebud started to get bigger and bigger and bigger and opened out into a beautiful rose.
Love all, serve all. We've made as famous as Swami has at the Hard Rock because we put it on millions and millions of t-shirts, jackets, buttons, badges, everything. If you got your check, if you work for me at the top, love all, serve all. We put huge signs up in every restaurant around the world.
Tryst with Divinity is our weekly series in which we bring you conversations with devotees of Bhagwan Baba from around the globe. You can listen to this on Asia Stream of Radio Sai every Tuesday at 9:50 a.m. and 8:30 p.m. To know more about the timings of this weekly series, Tryst with Divinity, on other streams of Radio Sai, please go to the schedule page on our website, radiosai.org. Or you can download and listen to any interview of your choice in the Tryst with Divinity series at your leisure by visiting the link radiosai.org/tryst. That is radiosai.org/tryst or tryst. Thank you and happy listening. Sai Ram. So sir, in 1977, you were married and a father of a child, and you and your wife were expecting your second son. That's when Baba invited you to attend the summer course meant for young men and women.
I'll mention the significance of the summer course in my life. In January 1977, myself and my mother had been to Patti, and Swami gave us an interview. And Swami said, today is a very auspicious day. It is 1st of January, New Year to a lot of Western people, devotees. That day happens to be the Muharram. And it was also Vaikuntha Ekadashi, very auspicious for the Hindus. On this auspicious day, see, I am talking to you and all that. Then we pray to Swami. Swami, you are told that you will physically come to our house and all, you know. In an earlier occasion, when the Aliket trip was getting confirmed and which got cancelled subsequently, Swami had said that he will come to Sirsi and stay with us. But it did not happen. That day Swami took my hand and said, I promise, I promise, I promise. After that we always felt Swami's presence in our house. That day Swami said, this year there is a summer course in Whitefield, which I want you to attend. My first reaction was, Swami, I do not have leave and I may not get leave. He said, all that I will take care. You come. And he had asked my sister also to come, and he gave her a student badge, though she was not a student from Anandpur. And when the summer course was about to begin, I approached my resident engineer. I was working in Goa at that time. And I told him that I have to go to attend this summer course. Of course, not knowing Swami, for him this summer course was like any other course that people attend. He was very reluctant. But he said, I can allow you to go on only one condition. He said, first, you have to go on without pay, you know.
Leave without pay.
Secondly, at that particular point of time, my chief engineer was traveling. He was about to go to United States of America. And I was instructed to start a new project, a dairy project, in Bijapur district of Karnataka. So, there was some time gap. And my resident engineer said, I will give you leave without pay on one condition, that the moment chief engineer comes and asks me, you have to be on that project site. On that condition, I'll help you. I agreed. Anyway, he is letting me to go. So I didn't know whether it will be 15 days, 20 days, 25 days, because summer course was month long. And I came. It was a wonderful experience of my life. And every day evening, Swami would give discourse on Ramayana. And all through the day, various learned speakers will speak on different subjects. You know, most wonderful experience. On the 25th day, I get a telegram from my company saying that the chief engineer has returned, joined duty immediately. And I was puzzled. I didn't know what to do. And in same day, I got three telegrams. And the last telegram was, if you don't respond, we'll have to take disciplinary action against you.
Oh, you were in trouble.
I was in trouble. And I didn't know what to do. So, next day evening, and I had to reply to them or give some decision. Swami had come into the auditorium, that Vrindavan College auditorium. And I was sitting there in that auditorium. I was crying. I was weeping. I said, I don't know, Swami, what to do. Give me some direction. Every day before Swami's discourse, there would be some renowned musician or somebody performing.
Performing, yes.
And that particular day, Purushottam Das Jalota,
Anup Jalota's father,
yes. He had come and he was singing some bhakti songs, devotional songs. And that particular day, the bhajan that he sang, even today I remember, it went something like this. Prabhala prema ke pale padkar, prabhu ko niyama badalte deka. Apana mana tale tala jaye, bhakta ka mana na talte deka. You know, it means, when you have intense devotion, God will always come to your rescue. Even if His prestige is at stake, He will not let your, you will suffer.
And He will change the rules honor.
Yes, yes. Mm. So, I made my decision. I tore off all the telegrams. I said, let whatever happens, happens.
Good
I
for
continued.
You.
I continued with the summer course.
Good decision.
Yeah. I continued with the summer course. The summer course ended. And last day, my father-in-law also had come. Swami instructed me to come to Puttaparthi. So along with my father-in-law, other family members, we followed Swami to Puttaparthi. And that evening Swami called me. I said, how was the summer course? How is your mind? Was it good? And all that. He inquired. Then he gave me some work. And because of which I had to go back to my native place, Sirsi. Then I had to go to Mangalore. You know, that particular responsibility that Swami gave me. That means another week, 10 days.
This holiday was extending.
So anyway, I thought that after 1.5 months, nobody would wait for my job. I prepared a resignation letter and I went to Goa. Straight away, I went to the fourth floor of our administrative office. I was working for the Dempo Group. And I met the administrative officer. The moment he saw me, before I could talk to anybody, he just pulled me and took me inside the room. He said, where are you, Mr. Dhakapa? We are so tense, this, that, and all that. I said, look, I don't want to give any explanation. You don't ask me any explanation. Here is my resignation letter, and please relieve me. He said, what resignation letter? What are you talking about? I said, I am not able to come 1.5 months. I have been missing on my duty, and I have to go, no? So this is the resignation letter. And what he told me was unbelievable. He said, we have already reported to the chief engineer that you are on the project site. The project work has been started. And here is your salary for the 2 months. He gave me the salary check also. It was the most wonderful experience. Of course, a few months later, Swami instructed me to resign. And then, of course, I resigned. That is a different story. Another beautiful thing that happened during the summer course, which changed my life, I must tell you. One day during the course of the summer course, Mr. R.K. Karanjia came and spoke.
The editor of the famous Blitz magazine.
Yes. Yeah. And morning session he spoke and he said that there is Kundalini and if you arouse Kundalini you become God and things like that. Mm-hmm. He went on speaking on Kundalini. And lot of observers sitting like me, you know, were very impressed. And lunchtime, at least I know about 4 or 5 of them rushed to Bangalore and bought all thick books about Kundalini, you know. And Swami being omnipresent, he would have realized that, these people are in trouble, listening to all this Kundalini.
It's not for everybody and you can't do it without proper supervision.
Yes. So that day evening, when Swami came to give the divine discourse, he suddenly said, today I will not speak about Ramayana, which he was doing for the last
whole series.
Yeah. I'll speak about Kundalini.
Oh.
And Swami explained all the 7 chakras from Mooladhara to Sahasrara, how, and he said that yes, by arousing Kundalini you become God, you become divine, but there is not a single individual in this world who can teach you properly. So I'm telling you emphatically, Swami said, you don't have to, you know, make all these efforts to arouse your kundalini. Mm-hmm. I'm giving you the simplest of the spiritual sadhana for this age. And Swami said, you know, that changed my whole life. He said, if you join the Sri Satya Sai Seva organizations and actively participate in the activities of the organization, that is the best spiritual sadhana that one can undertake.
What profound words, huh?
This is on record.
Yeah, don't worry about just working on your kundalini.
Nothing. You don't have to do anything.
Anything else. Just join the Sri Satya Sai Seva organization.
You do Satya Sai Seva organization.
And participate wholeheartedly.
Yes. And that probably changed my mind. Immediately after the summer course, when Bhagwan instructed me to resign, I went and joined the Satya Sai Seva Samiti in Sirsi. That was in 78, immediately after the summer course. So that changed my life, you know, in the direction of the organization.
And then let's just fast track to the time when Bhagwan handpicked you for a very important role, and actually you were possibly the youngest ever state president in the Sai organization.
Yes. Swami was preparing me for almost 10 years. From the time I joined the Satya Sai Seva Samiti in Sirsi, I had opportunity to accompany, you know, renowned devotees like Kasturiji, you know, Dr. M.V. Keshavarao, who was my predecessor, and a number of Swami's devotees who were touring here and there. I could accompany them, work with them, move around with them and learn. It was a, you know, great learning experience for me. Of course, I was not holding any position. I did not have any office bearer responsibility. In 1981, when Dr. M.V. Keshavarao, who was the state president before me, toured my district, and I accompanied him, took him everywhere in the district. And when he went back to Swami, and those days state presidents were privileged that once they tour and come back and they report to Swami, Swami will give them enough time to, you know, district by district Swami would discuss. That privilege we never got.
Mm-hmm.
So he was reporting about our district and Swami suddenly told him, you change the district president. Then he asked Swami, whom should I make? He said, there is a young engineer. Then Keshavarao said, yeah, one young engineer I met, Dakappa. Swami corrected him, not Dakappa, it is Dakappa. You make him district president.
Get and the pronunciation
yes,
also right.
Yes. And that is my family name, yeah, surname. Uh-huh. My first name is Nagesh. And he wrote to me. I didn't know it because it came as a big surprise to me. And I have no experience about the organization. And here he is writing to me that Swami wants you to shoulder this responsibility. And I consulted my father-in-law. He said, this is a great opportunity. Don't leave it. You know, Swami himself directing you, you must take it. And I accepted it. I didn't know how to talk. I didn't know how to organize. Nothing I knew. But I said, Swami's work. Swami has given. I accepted. And from then onwards, Swami gave me a lot of other responsibilities. He made me a member of the state trust in 86 and some EHU committee. The then state president, anytime he goes to Swami and asks for some responsibility, Swami would tell him, talk to Dakappa.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so much of confidence Swami showed. And in fact, in 87, after the All India Conference, the organization was going back from the district president system to state coordinator system.
I see.
Earlier, there were every district had a district president, and it was changed after that conference, and a state coordinator was put in charge of every three districts. Similarly, in Karnataka, a few devotees were chosen. All were elderly people, you know, 70, 75, 80 year old. I was the youngest chosen as one of the state coordinators.
Mm-hmm.
Before the scheme got implemented, after that meeting took place in Bangalore, I came to Parthi with my sister because Swami had already fixed her marriage and I wanted to seek some guidance from Swami, so we came to Parthi. 3 days we were staying in Parthi, Swami was talking to me outside only. That meeting happened on Thursday and then Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 3 days we stayed in Puttaparthi. Monday morning we were leaving back and those days I used to love going and sitting inside the Prashanti Mandir for bhajan. See, those days students were very few and you can sit right in front and Swami would come and sit on the throne there and the chair there. And I used to really love that, you know, attending those bhajans. And I would rush to go and sit inside that Mandir. On that Monday in the January 1988, I went and sat, and Swami was somehow looking at me and smiling continuously during the bhajan. And when he just pulls that footrest and gets up to take arati, he just looked at me mischievously, smiled and went away. I didn't know what it meant, and I was just coming out of the mandir. I told my sister to pack up, take the luggage and go to the bus stop, because we would normally catch the 9:45 bus to Bangalore. Those days there were not so many buses like now, and there used to be only one bus in the morning at 9:45. So she had already gone to the bus stand, and here as I was coming out of the mandir, there were three very important dignitaries of Swami standing, and one was Sri Gopal Rao, the former Andhra Bank chairman, and you know, he lived here up to 100 year old. Then one Dr. Advi Reddy, the World Council, you know, American
Dr. Narendra Reddy's father.
And Sri Hejmadi was in charge of the central office. Three people were standing, and they told me that you are Mr. Dakappa, no? I said, yes, we want to talk to you. I said, sir, I have to leave, and already my sister has gone to the bus stop. No, it's very important, you have to come with us. And they took me to the central office near that East Prashanti, you know, the office used to be there those days. And they started questioning me, what is your name, what is your father's name, what is your academic qualification, this, you know, one after the, I was surprised. I said, what are you doing, sir, I have to go, I'm missing my bus.
Job interview or what?
Yeah. Then said, no, Swami has asked us to talk to you. And Swami wants you to become state president. I literally started trembling. I said, sir, please leave me. It is not possible. I am not experienced. And there are a lot of elders in Karnataka who can shoulder this, not me. So I request you to please leave me. I am not eager, or I am not willing to shoulder this. They went on and on and on. And in the meantime, they had sent word to my sister to come back to the room and keep the luggage and wait. So I was not agreeing, and they were not leaving me. It went on till about 11 o'clock, and then they said, you don't go, you wait till afternoon, we'll inform Swami and then we'll take a decision. I said, okay, I'll wait. And afternoon, once Swami came down for darshan, immediately Swami called these people and they went inside. And within 2 minutes, Mr. Gopal Rao came out and said, Swami is calling you. And I went inside. And then Swami said, they have told you, no. So, you please accept. I said, Swami, no. And it went on, you know. I remembered my marriage time, what I had mentioned earlier to you. Same thing was repeating. And I made a few excuses. Like, I said, Swami, I am very young. There are elderly people, more matured, you know, more knowledgeable. They will be a better choice. As if, you know, I have to tell Swami what is a better choice. Swami said, you have to do these things when you are young. How can you do this work when you are old? I want you to do this when you are young. So, feeling that this excuse did not work, I put in the next excuse. I said, Swami, I stay in a small town, Swami, far away from Bangalore. Mm-hmm. I don't stay in the capital city. So, state president must be in capital city, Swami. So, I said, this my reasoning will work. You know what Swami said? He asked me, do you know Professor Anil Kumar? I said, yes, Swami. He is state president of Andhra Pradesh. He does not stay in Hyderabad. He stays in Guntur. And then Swami said, you know Kerala state president, Natarajan, that time Sri Natarajan was the state president of Kerala. He does not stay in Trivandrum. Okay. He stays in Ernakulam. So for my sake, you need not stay in Bangalore. Okay, but I want you to do this. So when repeatedly, you know, my excuses were
running out,
I didn't know Swami. I am not competent to do this. Just keep quiet. And suddenly Swami became very firm. With stern voice, he asked me, will you do it or not for Swami? And I would like to add here one thing. When Swami solved my family problems, those days Sai Kulanthal was not there. Whenever he used to come to Parthi, early morning, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, we'll take production of the mandir.
Mandir, yes.
And those days Swami would stay in that upstairs room.
Above the interview room.
And I would love to stand below that window and talk to Swami.
In your heart?
In my heart. And I would tell Swami, Swami, you have solved all my problems. All my life I will do whatever work you give me.
After saying all that, why were you so reluctant?
Reluctant because I felt that I was very young and inexperienced. Such a great responsibility, I was not competent to handle. Because I had my limitations staying in a small place. And all my earlier state presidents were all stalwarts. You see, Dr. V.K. Gokak, Dr. Sundar Rao, Kasturi Ji, Dr. Keshav Rao, they were all people of high standing, you know, educational background. And I felt I am a too small a man to handle this work. But when Swami firmly commanded, I remembered the promise I made to Swami. I fell at his feet. I said, all my life, Swami, whatever you tell me, I'll do. I felt I'm not competent, that's why I was reluctant. He said, I will guide you at every step. I want you to do this, take up this responsibility. He blessed me, gave series of instructions what to do, gave me Vibhuti Prasadam. And then, before I was going out of the interview, he called me. Then, you know, he wanted to make the situation very light. He jokingly told me, these people caught hold of you at the bus stop, is it? And he made a big joke. And he instructed Dr. Advi Reddy to issue a letter and whom all the copies should be sent and all that. And he told me to collect the letter next day and leave. Here I would like to add one more, you know, how Swami responds to our beliefs also. As I told you earlier, I was a little superstitious. And when I went back to the room, I came to know the next day is Amavasya.
Okay.
Such an important responsibility Swami is giving.
Amavasya is not auspicious according to Hindus.
Some people believe, you know, for me all the auspicious things have happened during Amavasya only. My marriage also just 2 days before Amavasya and this also before Amavasya. But somehow I felt, why take that letter on Amavasya day? You know, I said to myself, but I had no choice. Swami had instructed, they will give the letter, next day I have to take it. So next day morning I went and sat outside. Swami, once he came out of the interview room, called his people and said something. I didn't know what. So suddenly they came and told me, Swami has said, today is Amavasya, don't give the letter. Let him go.
Okay.
You post the letter to him.
Oh. So you know, how reading your mind.
Yes, how he was responding to our feelings. And of course, that is how that letter was dated 20th January, the first day of the next month. You know, and in fact, 6 months before he nominated me as the state president, a group of devotees from Davangere had come here and Swami gave them interview. Swami mentioned my name to them in some reference and said, he is my state president. They were all surprised. They said, Swami, Dakappa is not state president. No, he is state president. You know, he had mentioned. And even today they remember, 6 months before only Swami had told us that he is going to make you state president. And it was all destined. Swami had me prepared. That is why from 74, he never let me go anywhere, even overseas assignment or job, nothing. So I felt that he was preparing me all along. And he has stood by me and he has inspired me. Whatever work I was able to do, he only inspired. You have to just silently sit and pray and he will tell you what to do. He will inspire you. And that is my experience. I don't want to claim anything that I have done this, I have done. It is all done by Swami, using us as an instrument.
If it is so, why do we tend to forget as human beings, and every now and then we tend to take ownership, I did this, or this was led by me, or it was my project? A lot of people have that question, because when Swami was in the form, from the outside it appeared like people would approach Swami physically and tell Bhagwan, you know, about the updates and the great work they were doing. All good stuff only, but there was a sense of doership sometimes visible in people's actions. Where do we get that from? If we genuinely, as devotees, we constantly say we are only instrument, Swami is the doer.
See, we say that Swami is omnipresent, omniscient, omnipotent.
Right.
But we tend to forget many times. We cannot remember it constantly, you know. This factor of Maya comes into picture probably. I've seen Swami from close quarters. I would like to mention here, there used to be a very thin distinction when he would be human and when he is divine. I've experienced this. See, after I became state president, we were going inside Trai, sitting with Swami. And at times he will be really fully divine. At times, you know, he would talk mundane things, that what is happening in that district, what is happening in government, what is happening in Delhi, you know, things like that. When you start wondering, Hari, God is discussing all this, you know.
Like newspaper headlines.
Newspaper headlines. But suddenly, you know, that thin line of distinction is very difficult. So they have to be always careful. And for me, somehow, in Swami's presence, I never was able to open my mouth, even in a personal interviews, before I became state president also.
Well, you argued a lot with him about not wanting to get married, not wanting to be the state president.
Before I understood his divinity, but after I once realized, It was very difficult for me to talk anything. And Swami would, you know, insist, you talk something, why you are not talking? And once my mother said, Swami, in your presence, he is totally silent, he doesn't talk anything. And then Swami said, Swami, when I see you outside, I get so scared talking. And you are inside, you are totally different. And I remember what he told me, Bangaru, Baya Bhakti Yadu Irbeku. There should be Baya and Bhakti both.
Fear and devotion both.
Yes, both. So, I have to be like that outside. Inside, I am pure love.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. Now, your experiences as the state president, that's a whole separate chapter and I'll save it for another discussion. But in light of the fact that you've been with Bhagwan since 1968, that's a very long tenure. Today in 2013, a lot has changed from the time that you would come in and go with this bundle of horoscopes to find the right match for one of your siblings to shouldering the responsibility of a very important state. And now the Mahasamadhi has happened. How have things changed in your life and in your relationship with Bhagwan?
I'll mention what happened post-Mahasamadhi. See, we were observing from 2003-2004 onwards, Swami had
withdrawn a bit.
The interviews were very, very few. Yeah. Personal interaction were becoming lesser and lesser. Even with organizational instruction, he would be very, very brief. Earlier, he would talk to us for hours together, keep on telling the same things, you know. But that, you know, the withdrawal symptoms were very, very clear. But we didn't expect that it would be all come so sudden, you know. And the impact was terrible. Especially people like us who have experienced Swami's physical love on such a level. For me, I was here last 3 days, you know, 22nd, 23rd, 24 April. I happened to come here because Swami was in hospital. And when this news broke down and next 3 days, we're literally sitting and crying, trying to remember things, you know, what all Swami did for us. And even after the Mahasamadhi, I went back to Bangalore. As a family, we were all shattered, you know. I was sitting for almost 15 days, doing nothing but thinking about Swami. I kept thinking about Swami again and again, what all he did for us, how minute things he did. I remembered so many minute details which I had missed when those things happened. I would like to share one or two things. See, in one of the interviews, especially when he named my son as Madhukar, Swami suddenly looked at my mother and said, see, your grandson is crying, because he was crying continuously. And Swami would say, hey, don't cry, Madhukar, don't cry. Suddenly he looked at my mother and said, see, your son at this age was very, very quiet, no? It was a casual statement Swami made. But when I was sitting now after Mahasamadhi remembered, I realized for the first time that Swami knew me as a child of few months. Physically, I came to Swami at the age of 18. And I suddenly remembered the book I read, you know, written by Charles Penn, Finding God. He has narrated a similar instance.
Yeah.
So for all of us, it is not the connection of only when you came physically to Swami. The connection is longer and longer.
Of many lifetimes.
Many lifetimes. Mm-hmm. But even when you are born, right from your birth, your connection has been there with Swami. And there were a lot of media criticisms, you know, a lot of things were happening. And one day I was watching some TV channel. They said, see, Swami is having a golden paduka, silver paduka, Navaratna paduka, he wears all these, you know, all kinds of things.
Lies
they were talking.
Mm.
And I recollected one instance. You know, in 75, when I told you he solved our family problem, we were waiting for Swami in Sai Ram Shed in Vrindavan. And that evening, because next day Swami spoke to us, gave that paduka and all that, previous evening it rained heavily. It rained so heavily that there was no opportunity for Swami to come out. It was already 5:30 and it was getting darker. And very few devotees were left, because everybody left. We are hardly about 15-20 people. And there was absolutely no chance of Swami coming out, you know, because we were living in Bangalore in a lodge and coming to Vrindavan and going back. So anyway, we have to go back to the lodge and sleep. So better we wait for some more time. It was around 6 o'clock. Suddenly the Vrindavan gate opened. Swami came out. Today that scene, when if I remember, tears come to my eyes. Because Swami at that hour was walking slowly and coming out. He lifted his gown almost 1 feet above the ground because it doesn't get wet. And in that slushy soil, without any footwear, slippery ground, he was walking slowly and came to us. Hardly there were 15-20 devotees. He came to me. You know what he said? Bangaru, today is Ashtami. That's why I didn't call you. Tomorrow morning I'll call you and talk to all of you and make you happy. He said that and went back. Today as I think back, there was no reason for God to come out all the way in that difficult condition just to tell me that. Anyway, he was going to talk to me next day. He would have called and talked. And today these people criticize that he is wearing golden paduka and silver paduka, that God came with the barefoot in that slushy soil, yeah, slippery ground. He came only to tell us.
And I can just add to it, the media was also constantly, they had a reporter standing in front of our super specialty hospital in Whitefield. Beautiful hospital where we treat thousands of people free. And he did a piece to camera and said, this is the Yajur Mandir, the palatial building in which Satya Sai Baba lived. That is a 330-bed hospital, not Swami's residence.
Yes, it is.
And they superimposed the word Puttaparthi on that hospital, which is in Bangalore, physically located 200 kilometers away. So that was the extent of authenticity that the reporting was happening.
Yes.
So,
and so many people were after us during Swami's hospitalization also, the media, the press reporters. I would only say one word. See, as a state president, I have no knowledge about Swami's illness. The medical director is issuing suitable bulletins. You have to follow that. You see, I'm not a doctor. Now, I'm not in medical profession. Now, after a few days, I kept saying, see, we are committed to the mission of Swami. We have to carry on with our work. And the best way, and I was worried because Karnataka is exclusively doing the Sevadal work in Bangalore Super Speciality Hospital in Vrindavan. It should not get affected. And there was a lot of confusion among the devotees and, you know, with this media and print and electronic media. There was a lot of problems. So what we started doing is, I said, we must act now. I made a firm resolve. And I must tell you a very strange thing that happened. I don't know how to connect it. And I was talking to my wife sitting in our apartment. And suddenly in the balcony, it's very strange. It has never happened in the 8 years that I've been staying in that apartment. I've never seen a single sparrow. That day when I was telling my wife that now I think I must carry on with the activities, I must now streamline everything and increase the programs, activities, everything, sparrows were sitting there and looking at me. And they were there for almost 10 minutes, we didn't notice. The moment I said, see, two sparrows are sitting, and when both of us sit, they just flew away.
Mm-hmm.
And I firmly, you know, feel that Swami showed his presence.
When you were thinking right.
Thinking right. Mm. And that gave me an inspiration that I must carry on. Then what I did was, I started a lot of devotees meet. We increased a lot of activities in Vrindavan. And then Swami himself guided me. He came in my dream and said, you do summer course in Vrindavan. So next day, immediately, I didn't know how to go about it. As an organization, we have the capacity to conduct a summer course. But the conduct the summer course in a way which will meet Swami's expectation, that is what we wanted to achieve. So I went to Brother Sanjay Sahni, director of the institute. I told him that this is what Swami has indicated to me. Can we work together? And that is first time, you know, that the Satya Sai Institute of Higher Learning and Satya Sai Seva Organizations worked together on a project which was approved by everybody. And we had a wonderful summer course in which 900 children from across Karnataka participated. You know, we had a big press meet. And the summer course, when we began that summer course, there were a lot of obstacles. One was the shortage of water. There were a lot of things loose and to be tied. Accommodation for all these people, food arrangement, everything. And we wanted to do it exactly the way Swami was doing it in earlier years. And I must admit here, at the end of the summer course, when all around Vrindavan, every apartment was facing water shortage, we did not have a sump in Vrindavan. You know, now we have, but at that particular time, we didn't have. We can't store water. But at the end of the summer course, we had still one overhead tank full of water. And that's Swami's miracle. How it happened, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And then there were many, many small things, you know, like somebody one day came and told me, see, your menu does not contain ice cream for the students. whereas Swami would definitely give ice cream to every student who participates in the summer course. I must tell you how Swami responds so immediately. Within 10 minutes, I get a call from my education coordinator, and she said, "Mr. Dakappa, the alumni girls of Anandpur College, they want to contribute ice cream for all the students." You know, it is just a matter of 5 minutes.
Mm.
And our custodian, Shri Bhotiaji, came to me and said, "Swami, sabko jane ke time mein aam dete the, mangoes." I said, "Look, the season has not yet started and mangoes are very expensive. How we can organize 1,500 mangoes? And I must tell you, before the summer course ended, somebody came and gave 1,500 mangoes. Everybody we gave mangoes, like Swami used to give. Every small detail, you know, at every step we felt Swami's presence.
Mm-hmm.
During the entire summer course. And I must tell you, I have requested our All India President and other members that such summer courses to be held more and more.
Now, this is a course on Indian culture and spirituality.
Yes, yes.
For students across Karnataka, not Sai students necessarily.
No, no, it was across our youth.
Youth, Sai youth of Karnataka organization.
Need not be Sai youth. We selected boys and girls from different educational institutions across Karnataka.
Karnataka, very
and
nice.
Many of them were not knowing anything about Swami. Because I remember when Swami started in 1972 onwards, every year summer course after summer course, when 1,000 children were participating, how these boys were or girls were at the beginning of the summer course and how they got transformed at the end.
Yeah.
We couldn't do it for 1 month. Mm. We did it only for 5 days. But I have seen the transformation that Swami would effect in these boys and girls, you know, during the summer course.
Mm. Now, Mr. Dakappa, much water has flowed down the river under the bridge since that time. And Mahasamadhi has happened. If I asked you very briefly, who is Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba for you? What would you say to me?
He's God himself for me. For me, as I told you, my family deity is Parvati Devi and there is a Ishwara, Shiva Shakti. Swami here is Shiva Shakti personified. And Swami is my Ishtadevata Gopal Krishna. I told you our ancestors established the Gopal Krishna temple. There were many occasions when we were in Swami's presence. Swami said, "You know, you are all like Pancha Pandavas and I am your Krishna."
The five brothers that you
yes.
are. Mm-hmm. But if Bhagwan were to physically be sitting right here at this very moment, what would you say to him, sir?
Long back I read a book by Kasturiji's autobiography, Loving God. The first sentence that Kasturiji has written is, "You are born in this world to learn how not to be born again and again." If I have to say, Swami, I want to serve till my last breath and reach your lotus feet at the end of my life. And that is what I would say to him.
In the manner that he said we should pray for, that
yes.
we go without a struggle. And without ever stretching our
yes.
hands to another person for help.
Yes.
Very beautiful. Thank you very much, sir.
Sairam.
Sairam. Sairam.
Tune in to Sai.
Spend the day with Sai. From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Sai's Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned.
Sai Ram, and thank you for staying tuned to Morning Glory on January the 23rd, 2014. We are coming to you live from Prashanthi Nilayam, India, where the time right now is 10:23 a.m. You just heard the concluding part of our Tryst with Divinity interview with Mr. Nagesh Dakappa, the state president of the Sri Satya Sai Seva Organization of Karnataka. In case you have missed parts 1 or 2 of this very engaging interview with Mr. Dakappa, you can find it on our website. And this is how. Either you go to Thursday Live Archive on our website and look for it under the last 2 weeks of Morning Glory. Or, even simpler, just go to radiosai.org and on the home page on the left side, just beside the mobile phone sign, look for audio search. Click on it and a box will appear. In the box, type the word TRYST, T-R-Y-S-T, and its predictive text, it will automatically say TRYST with Divinity, Select it, an entire list of interviews will appear. In that, you can look for Mr. Dakappa's name and I will spell it for you. D-H-A-K-A-P-P-A. Click on the download button and it's yours to enjoy for free. And you can also enjoy several hundred other interviews under the Tryst with Divinity series right there on the same page. By the way, dear listeners, did you like this Tryst with Divinity interview with Mr. Dakappa or did you just simply love it? We are waiting to hear from you. Please email us your feedback at listener@radiosci.org. Now moving along, it is now time for a Fleeting Moments interview with Miss Ishwari Rao of Canada, who is a graduate of Baba's school here in Prashanthi Nilayam, and here it is for your listening pleasure. You're listening to Radio Sai Global Harmony, bringing you the message of Bhagwan Sri Sathya Sai Baba. Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories is our weekly radio series in which we bring you conversations with the former students of Bhagwan Baba's schools and colleges.
Let me narrate to you an episode. Our room leader was Kotesa. I asked him, is it compulsory to go for darshan?
Oh my God.
I had the nerve to ask him that.
I think it's a very sea change when you become a Sai student, because it's only when I've joined the Sathya Sai College I discovered that this God is not a photograph on the wall and he's not something so distant. It's something very, very near you.
And this was lovely because there you had on the gymnastic bench the student on one side, Swami on the other side, locked in battle. It was arm wrestling with Swami.
And having been given the divine golden opportunity to have studied in his institutions and directly experienced his love, then we have to really live our lives to reflect his teachings.
Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories is our weekly radio series in which we bring you conversations with the former students of Bhagwan Baba's schools and colleges. You can listen to this on Asia Stream of Radio Sai on the Morning Glory segment of Thursday Live, which starts at 9:40 a.m. To know about the timings of this weekly series, Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories, on other streams of Radio Sai, please go to the schedule page of our website, radiosai.org. You can also download and listen to Fleeting Moments at your leisure by visiting the link radiosci.org/sci-students. That is radiosci.org/sai-students, with Sai students being one word. Thank you and happy listening. Sai Ram.
So, after 6 years at the Sathya Sai Higher Secondary School, when you left in 1989, you went out into the world to follow your degrees in Madras, in Pondicherry, in New Delhi, and you then had to leave Swami's physical form and start relating to him long distance. What was that experience like and how did you cope with it?
It was actually hard. First of all, as Sai students, we are so well protected here under his umbrella, and not that he doesn't protect elsewhere, but definitely it was a culture shock for me because the system is different outside. The way it works outside is slightly different, so it was very difficult initially, but...
Like what? What did you find hard to cope with?
I would say sometimes we follow the Sai ideals so strictly, and I think we are very watchful of what we do as Sai students, and when you step out, sometimes there are people digress from those value systems, and it kind of hits you that you are in another world. And that's where initially it was very hard for me to take, because...
It disillusioned you?
It disillusioned me initially, yeah. But then I've seen that when you live by example, then others automatically follow.
Yeah. But was it hard to stand your ground when you saw others digressing?
It wasn't hard, because when it's all so ingrained,
in you. Mm-hmm. It's not hard for us, but for us to kind of see is initially hard.
Because you're not used to seeing people do things in ways which are not appropriate necessarily as per the rules or the discipline.
Yeah.
I see.
Right after my master's, I got this project to work in Mumbai to do my master's thesis work, and that was in Nicholas Perelman, and I spoke to my parents about it, and my parents were initially very skeptical to send me to a place like Mumbai where you find, you know, there was initially a lot of unrest during that period, especially during the Babri Masjid, and yeah, that's the time when there was the destruction of Babri Masjid.
So there was a lot of political upheaval in this country, and the climate was not very conducive.
No, it wasn't. So they were not very comfortable sending me to Mumbai, but Dad kind of negotiated. He said that, let's see, you can come along. I have official work in Mumbai around that time. Let's see if there is a good place for your residence. Then we can think about having you there for, it was like 6 to 8 months period. So when I went there with Dad, there's one particular incident when I somehow felt that Swami really was so much, I mean, helping us resolve this issue of whether I should stay or not. And to tell you, in my family, he's always been an invisible head of the family. Like, Dad and Mum would take their mental consultations, and we always agreed that if it pleases him or Swami says yes, and for Dad it was like handing a letter, he would immediately take, then that's like a consent Swami is given in his consent. Mummy had her own ways of getting there. So in this particular situation, we were all searching for different hostels, and my dad's colleague said that some of the hostels are really not good in Mumbai. Are you really thinking of keeping your daughter there? And then it so happened that through word of mouth, they figured out that there was this hostel in Vashi, which is Navi Mumbai, and they said, why don't you give it a shot, because it's a very nice place, and some of my friends have stayed there. So we went there, and it was very quiet area. It was very close to a creek, and that's where there was also a Balaji temple bang opposite to the hostel. And it so happened that the lady said there are openings and I could register. My dad was saying, but the commute is going to be very far. Then let's see, register anyways. And we registered and came out, and Dad said, I want to go to the Balaji temple for now, you know, take his blessings. And we went there, and then the watchman, after coming out, says, why don't you also go to the adjacent building? Not many of them know this, but there's a Sai center. And this Balaji temple had, adjacent to that was a Sai center for the Vashi.
Hmm.
And it was such a hit for, especially Dad was very nervous leaving me there in Mumbai. And that's when we went to the Vashi Sai center. We came out and we felt that, you know, Swami was the one who orchestrated this whole thing, that I would still be protected in that environment. But, you know, in retrospect, I never felt later that Mumbai was in any ways an unsafe place. Like, I felt Swami's presence throughout. And following this, I went to New Delhi. And New Delhi, I was so much involved in my own career that I didn't do much of Sai activity because I wanted to further my career. And when this opportunity came up in Saskatoon, I thought I have to step out of the zone, because mainly, one, we had some financial constraints, and I thought I can chip in my own way. So I went to Saskatoon. And that's another story altogether.
Very cold place to go to.
Very, very cold. Like, first of all, I didn't know its existence. I didn't even know the name.
Canadian Prairies.
Yeah, it's called the Canadian Prairies.
From plus 45 in summer to minus 45 Celsius in winter time.
Right.
Extremes.
Yeah, it was an extreme place to go to. But as soon as I stepped in Canada, I somehow felt that the people are very warm. maybe that's the reason why it kind of warms your heart and makes you feel comfortable too. Like in the flight, of course, I was feeling very nostalgic and miserable, not eating anything. But when I stepped out of the flight, like especially in Saskatoon, I didn't feel the cold. From day one, people were so forthcoming and helpful. One particular incident where I really felt Swami's presence is like initially when I was settling, I think I didn't know the system so well, so I was traveling by transit services and the bus driver indicated to me that you need to, you know, flash your tickets before stepping in, and I think I'd left my wallet by mistake in another handbag and I didn't carry that day. And it was quite cold to, you know, step out of the bus because it would have given me a frostbite. So that's when he said, come along. And it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And I was like thinking, my God, like this is Swami who is...
How considerate, huh?
Yeah, it was his divinity or whatever I would say. That's when I think of Swami's words, see Sai and all. And I think they live by it.
Yeah. Like, that's very quintessential Canadian culture.
Yeah.
Never mind, right now it's so cold, hop into the bus.
Yeah.
Because it's heated.
Yeah, so yeah. For me it was a new experience because it has never happened and like we have to have a ticket in order to go. So that was one Sai experience I felt. And the other experience was as students we used to do part-time jobs initially and I was working in a convenience store as a cashier. And every morning at 7 sharp, there's this elderly gentleman who would come in to take some kind of a coffee and a newspaper to read during his travel time. And one particular Sunday morning, he just came in and he used to always have a smile on his face. And that was quite infectious in the sense like your day starts with that. So he came in and he didn't stop at that. He was going through all the counters and he sees this lady. There was also a lady, frail looking one with a hunchback. She was looking at the price tags and picking up her groceries and he was in front of her when it was the time for making payments. So he came in front of her and he said, one coffee, newspaper, and whatever the lady has bought.
Sweet.
Now for me, that was such a beautiful incident. And you know, his reply was, when she felt embarrassed, saying, no, I can pay for my own groceries. He said, you know what, I'm doing this for you today. You can make this chain work.
So carried forward.
Carried forward.
It's a very, very Canadian thought.
Yeah, it was so beautiful for me that...
It happened recently at Starbucks also. The drive-through, everybody bought their coffee and it was already paid for by the car ahead. So they paid for the person behind them. So the chain continued in the U.S. also.
And I feel that, you know, such a beautiful way. I wish we can carry this kind of a culture of helping each other. It really, the
world is a help ever hurt, never in practice.
Yeah. So this is again Sai's, you know, the divinity which Swami talks about, seeing him in all.
Okay. Now, when you were in Canada, just before the Mahasamadhi, Swami made very clear to you that he was always with you, blessing you. What happened?
I was traveling in the bus one day and there was this lady sitting next to me. She saw my diary, which had Swami's face, I mean, on the cover page. And I guess it must have attracted her. She said, who is he? I said, he's my guru and guide and everything. And then she said, you have to expand on that. And I told her that I have studied in his school and he's an educationalist and he has done so many welfare programs for the downtrodden. And so she was quite interested and then she said, I just want to know, how old is he? I said, he's going to turn 86. So she was quite surprised. He looks very young. That's true. Swami really looked very young. And she says, what happens after he goes? Now that, it was a jolt for me. And she looked into my eyes with such, you know, it felt as if Swami was asking me this question. What happens after I go? And for the moment, I was speechless. And I told her, you know what, Swami has taught us so much and left behind. I'm sure that his work will go on. So that's what kind of I stopped at that, but it kind of left me very uncomfortable because I had never thought about it in my mind. So this was just before Bahad Samadhi. And also at home front, my mom had a dream. And she got this dream, then Swami said that, Dhairyam ga undu, like, you know, be courageous.
Have courage.
Have courage. So I think this was just before the birthday, that is in 2010 birthday. She had this dream and came for the birthday. She saw him in the morning and she kind of felt it, that Swami was trying to convey her something. And in the evening when I called, she said, be ready, Swami is going to depart soon. That time I didn't believe that.
She knew it intuitively?
Yeah. And then same thing, like I think she was traveling once from Puttaparthi to Chennai in the train as well. She had this experience. I think it was one of the elderly gentlemen. He was saying something with regard to Swami's departure. And she came home and close to Mahasamadhi time, she said, Swami is going. And like it was so upsetting for the entire...
And then how did you cope with the Mahasamadhi, post-Mahasamadhi? It happened. Nobody was ready or could ever be ready for such an eventuality because we just felt, you know, Swami was going to be around for so much longer. But then when it did happen, how did you cope?
Initially, it was hard because I used to always look forward to all the news that was coming in, because I have to mention that I didn't come here during that time. I was away. And for me, whatever news I could grab from would be via the Radio Sai or other websites. It was very hard for me. And later on, when I kind of thought through and I thought this is the time for us to internalize and reflect and capture all the moments that we had before the treasure chest which we gathered, I pulled out all that, and that's when I think I started giving more importance to meditation. That's
the
like
inner correction.
Yeah, I would always like start conversing with Swami. Earlier it was like while working I would converse, but this was my own personal time with Swami. I would connect with him and converse with him. Of course, I didn't go into the technical ways of meditation, but it was my own time with Swami, and I felt his presence following that in many ways. Like, in fact, I noticed that he would work through me in not only my own research work, he would work, but also the SSC-related matters, he would give me guidance.
So, you know, the way the gentleman in the grocery store where you were working, he carried it forward, the goodness he had received. You also are carrying forward the grace you have received from Bhagwan by being an instrument, and you teach SSC, and you are, for a young person, doing incredibly well because you're the Assistant National Coordinator for Education for whole of Canada. Now, in your experience as an SSC guru and the Deputy or Assistant National Coordinator of Education, how are you experiencing this grace and guidance that you speak of?
Swami, actually, I think he's equipped all his students with all the knowledge possible. It's all there, and all we have to do is tap that energy. And one thing is, before I go to any class, I kind of tell to myself, am I good enough in this, or am I following or practicing it? It's all about assimilating his teachings and applying it in our day-to-day life. So I usually pray to Swami, and Swami has helped me overcome that inhibitions, whatever I have. Without us knowing it, he guides us very silently. And that's what I feel, that we have to convey his message by living his message. So
very well said, yeah. And it's time now.
Yeah.
I was talking to a colleague of mine and I was recording his fleeting moments, and he said there was a moment When he was so devastated after the Mahasamadhi, he was sitting in front of the casket where the divine body was placed. And when they closed that curtain, he just had that moment of awakening. He said, now it's our turn. Swami's done enough.
Yeah, it's like walking his talk.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so I feel that that's our Guru Dakshina as Sai students. So
it's time to
do
all that we have received.
That's true.
Now, you work in the area of cancer research and you are a very senior researcher, associate. How do your peers relate to you? Because, you know, you are a person of great personal discipline. You have your own boundaries. You are very bound by the values you were raised in, which are not necessarily everybody's cup of tea. But you work in a very mixed, multicultural, multi-faith, cosmopolitan environment in the world of science. How does being Ishwari Rao affect those around her, and how do they relate to you, your peers?
Swami has been a perfectionist, and he's groomed us all to be perfect in everything. Whatever we need to take up, we try and make every sincere effort to make it perfectly. So my colleagues actually perceive me as a person who is very meticulous in whatever task I take up. And I feel that I learned that from Swami, and I should carry it throughout the jobs that I take up. And also, one thing is, they feel that I'm too humble, and I think all Sai students are too. The degrees may vary, and I feel that when we are doing our work, when we dedicate it at his lotus feet, then we don't get the credit. Like, that's what I feel. So,
but is our humility our strength or a weakness?
It is our strength, actually. So,
but in this world where people love three words, I, me and mine, and then we tend to be very self-negating because we know that Swami is the one who's achieving everything through us. The source of all our success is Swami, and we dedicate it to Swami, so we're just mere instruments.
Yeah.
Success belongs to Him. So in this world where people are constantly trying to have this one-upmanship, are you sure it's good to be humble?
Actually, for me, what's important is the focus on the task rather than myself, you know. How the task attains perfection, that's more important to me rather than me getting the credit for anything.
But we hear of people sort of stealing each other's credit in the world of science. Does that happen to you?
It's a very common feature. I'm definitely going to stand out as different. For me, I feel it's important to have a quality work. And yes, there is a number game. You need to have a set of papers.
Yeah, you have to publish so many
papers. Yeah, but my focus has always been on quality and getting one good paper. And yes, in that way, I'm different from the rest. And yes, that could be a drawback at some point, but I'm okay with that.
Ishwari, your final reflection. Today, where you are in your life, and you have your whole rest of your life ahead of you, what's the place of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba in it?
I feel it's my duty to contribute in whatever little way. Like, it's going to be one drop in a vast ocean, but I want to be like that squirrel too. I have to mention at this juncture that you, as Team Radio Sai, are doing such a commendable job conveying his message, his teachings to unknown parts of the world. And I feel like I can do my bit in my own way through the education wing as a guru, and also by conveying my own set of ideas, whatever I've learned in the Sai institutes. So I want to convey that too, so that we can get the next generation up and going, you know. And at this point, I want to mention that then I recently asked one of my SSE students as to what her goal is. She said, my immediate goal after finishing Group 3 is to be an SSE guru. So at least we can groom her as an intern. Like, you know, it's a very positive thought. I feel that it's very gratifying for the teacher when a child is trying to especially when the child has not even seen Swami at such close quarters. So I feel that it's time now to have the next generation ready.
And that's extremely important, because the next generation of SSC teachers or Bal Vikas gurus will most likely be individuals who have never had the opportunity to behold the avatar in his physical form. So they have to have a very strong inner connection to feel the level of motivation that we feel after having received so much from Swami.
That's true.
So we really have to take the game to the next level, don't we?
That's true.
Yeah. Very nice connecting with you, Ishwari, and listening to your experiences in Canada as well as in Satyasai School here. And thank you for your time.
Thank you, Didi.
Sairam. Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome back to Morning Glory, coming to you live from Prashanthi Nilayam, India, on January the 23rd, 2014. The time at the Radio Sai Studios right now is 10:49 a.m. You just heard the final part of our Fleeting Moments conversation with Miss Ishwari Rao of Canada. Sure hope you enjoyed it. Your feedback is very important to us. We always look forward to hearing from you at listener@radiosai.org. Now before I bid you sairam, I have a very important message for you from the Vatican and another important news flash from Chennai. Now regarding the Vatican news, these are some wonderful teachings from His Holiness Pope Francis, and surprisingly, but when I first read them, they sounded like a page straight out of Satyasai Speaks and the Vahini series. Clearly, the absolute truths are universal, even as the wise refer to them by many names. So, here are some of Pope Francis's advice or counsel to the Catholics around the world for ushering in 2014, and I think they apply to all of us. I got this list from Rappler.com that has compiled his most memorable quotes in the form of New Year's resolution, which I'm pleased to share with all our listeners. Number one advice from Pope Francis: don't gossip. He says it's one of our hobbies, and Pope Francis also sees it one of the most evil of activities. The Catholic leader denounces gossip as murder. Very strong, isn't it? He goes on to say, when we gossip, we are doing what Judas did and begin to tear the other person to pieces. Every time we judge our brothers in our heart, or worse, when we speak badly of them with others, we are murdering them. There is no such thing as innocent slander. Number two, Pope says, finish your meals. Common sense, isn't it? He says, no leftovers, please. Named after a 12th century saint who lived in poverty, Francis slams a culture of waste that neglects the plight of the hungry. The Pope says, we should all remember that throwing food away is like stealing from the tables of the poor and the hungry. I encourage everyone to reflect on the problem of thrown away and wasted food, to identify ways and means that, by seriously addressing this issue, are a vehicle of solidarity and sharing with the needy. To me, dear listeners, this sounds like stealing on desires. Do not waste food. Now, he also says, make time for others. That's number three. Tending to 1.2 billion members, Francis seems too busy for anything else. That is, until he calls up a stranger or entertains a random biker, or he sends a handwritten note to a Jesuit who he has never met. Teaching by example, he sent a handwritten thank you note to Father James Martin. The Jesuit who got the letter from the Pope says that he has inspired him to be more generous in my life and with my time. Number four, Pope says, choose the more humble purchase. Now this sounds again like stealing on desires money, to differentiate between needs and desires. The Pope rides a 29-year-old Renault, and in July he warned the nuns and the popes and the priests against luxurious lives, and he says, the joy of the world in the latest smartphone and the fastest car, give up that dream. Cars are necessary, but take a more humble one. Think of how many children die of hunger and dedicate the savings to them. Again, exactly like stealing on desires. And the Pope calls for what he describes as a sober and essential lifestyle. Okay, number five, meet the poor in the flesh.
Sure, we donate to charity, but this is not enough according to Pope Francis. He says commitment to the poor must be person to person in the flesh. Known as pro-poor, even when he was the Archbishop, he explains more in the book on Heaven and Earth, which he published 3 years before he became pontiff, and he goes on to say, and I quote him, it's not enough to mediate this commitment through institutions, which obviously help because they have a multiplying effect, but that is not enough. They do need excuse us, then I beg your pardon, they do not excuse us from our establishing personal contact with the needy. The sick must be cared for, even when we find them repulsive and repugnant, that those in prison must be visited. Sounds very much like what the Sai Sevaks do around the world. Number 6, the Pope says, stop judging others. Similar to his denouncement of gossip, he condemns prejudice. He reminds intolerant Catholics, for one, to respect atheists. If we, each doing our own part, if we do good to others, if we meet there doing good, and if we go slowly, gently, little by little, we will make that culture of encounter. We need that so much. We must meet one another doing good. Number 7, he says, befriend those who disagree. What can we do to our worst critics? We can take a cue from Pope Francis. He says, in November, he surprised Mario Palmaro, a traditionalist who wrote the article, The Reason Why We Don't Like the Pope. He just wanted to tell me that he's praying for me, says Palmaro, who is gravely ill, in an article by the Catholic News Agency. Francis does this in line with what he calls a culture of encounter. He says in July, when leaders in various fields ask me for advice, my response is always the same. Dialogue, dialogue, dialogue. It is the only way for individuals, families and societies to grow, and the only way for the life of peoples to progress along with the culture of encounter, a culture in which all have something good to give and all can receive something good in return. Others always have something to give if we know how to approach them in a spirit of openness and without prejudice. Number 8, the Pope says, make commitments such as marriage. This is important for people who are commitment shy, and he says we should not be afraid to say forever. And I quote him, he says, today there are those who say that marriage is out of fashion. In a culture of relativism and the ephemeral, many preach the importance of enjoying the moment. They say that it's not worth making a lifelong commitment, making a definitive decision forever, because we do not know what tomorrow will bring. I ask you instead to be revolutionaries, to swim against the tide. Yes, I'm asking you to rebel against that culture that sees everything as temporary and that ultimately believes that you are incapable of responsibility, that you are incapable of true love. I have confidence in you, and I pray for you, have the courage to swim against the tide. Have the courage to be happy. Now, number 9, yet another advice from the Pope is, make it a habit to ask the Lord, are you bothered about the future? Pray, the Pope urges us, especially the youth. He says, dear young people, some of you may not yet know what you will do with your lives. Ask the Lord and He will show you the way. And number 10, most important, be happy. The true Christian, says the Pope, exudes great joy. He says, keeping this joy to ourselves will make us sick in the end. Sometimes these melancholy Christian faces have more in common with pickled peppers than the joy of having a beautiful life. Francis says in a homily, joy cannot be held at heel. It must be let go. Joy is a pilgrim virtue. It is a gift that walks on the path of life, that walks with Jesus, proclaiming joy. It lengthens and widens that path. The Christian sings with joy, walks and carries this joy. This joy, he reminds us, should translate to love of neighbors. So it sounds very much like what Bhagwan says, isn't it, dear listeners? He said, whenever people ask Swami, what can we do for you, Swami? And he said one thing, always be happy, because happiness is union with God. I'd like to thank Rappler.com for compiling this wonderful list that I have shared with you from the Pope, and I'm sure we can all draw some New Year's resolution from the Pope's message. What is yours going to be? We'd like to hear from you at listener@radiosai.org. Now, having gone through the Pope's advice, I have some wonderful news to share with you from Chennai. Recently, the Sri Satya Sai Seva Organization of Tamil Nadu celebrated the 33rd anniversary of Sundaram. Sundaram, as you may know, is the headquarters of the Sai organization in the South Indian city of Chennai. And I have with me a report that we have received from the state president of Tamil Nadu, of the Sri Satya Sai Seva Organization of Tamil Nadu. And I'd like to read out to you a few wonderful extracts that tell us about the way, the unusual and unique way in which this special occasion was celebrated. The report says, on the auspicious occasion when Sundaram completed 33 years in the holistic mission of service to mankind, it was felt appropriate to celebrate the occasion with one of the cardinal principles of our beloved Bhagwan, namely, unity of faiths. Upholding the culture of Bharat, Sri Satya Sai Seva Organization fosters the spirit of secularism, celebrating festivals of different religions at Prashanti Nilayam. The members of the Sri Satya Sai Seva Organization of Tamil Nadu, of course, decided to attend a holy mass at Santhom or the St. Thomas Basilica. The spiritual significance of the basilica merits specific mention as it is one amongst the only three churches in the world that were raised over the tomb of an apostle of Christ. The other two are at St. Peter's in Rome and St. James in Spain. St. Thomas came to India in 52 AD. This indeed is a special event as the revered clergy welcomed the Sai fraternity to be a part of the Holy Mass. Around 750 members of the organization attended the session. The All India President, the National Vice President, Convener of the Sai Trust Tamil Nadu, Trust members, State President, District President, Office Bearers of Samitis, members gathered in the church. Pin drop silence and prayerful lips of the assembly vibrated the Sai message to the humanity at large. Believe that all hearts are motivated by the one God, that all faiths glorify Him alone, that all names in all languages and all forms man can conceive denote the one supreme being. His adoration is best done by means of love, unquote. It is significant to note that Sai members of different sects and faiths, Christians, Hindus and Muslims, had come for the sermon. As many as 33 Muslim sisters and brothers from Ulundrupet, I hope I said it right, Ulundrupet, which is in Viluppuram district, had come specifically to attend the mass at the church. This huge assembly was eager to pay its obeisance to Lord Christ. Following the Sai Gospel, I have come to tell you of this universal unitary faith, this atmic principle, the principle of the spirit, this path of love, this dharma of prema, the nature of love, this duty of love, this obligation to love, unquote. Extending a hearty welcome to the Sai community on behalf of the Archbishop of Chennai, the revered pastors looked upon this grand event as celebration of love, unity and God's grace. They attributed the intention of Holy Mass for the welfare of the Divine Assembly, putting forth the doctrine of Christianity that resonated with Bhagwan's divine code, universal brotherhood of mankind, prayer of confession and sacrifice. Stories from the Gospel were chanted, assuring God's support for spiritual elevation of all. The meticulous participation of the Sai members in the event highlighted their belief in their master's precept that let the different faiths exist. Let them flourish. Let the glory of God be sung in all languages in a variety of tunes. Interestingly, after the Holy Mass got over, the Muslim sisters and brothers from Viluppuram district went to Sundaram and rendered namaz in commemorating the 33rd anniversary of Sundaram. Thus, this event, from a spiritual perspective, sheds light on the mutual reverence of respective faiths, what our beloved Bhagwan saw as ek atma bhava, when religious integrity is upheld. Unquote. Dear listeners, isn't it wonderful to see the Sarva Dharma symbol come alive in action in the 33rd anniversary celebrations at Sundaram in Chennai? we pray to Swami that this ecumenical vision of His message opens more and more hearts and dissolves our sense of barriers. Now with that, it is time for me to offer morning glory at Bhagwan's lotus feet. This is a grateful Karuna along with audio engineer Sunil bidding you Sai Ram. I hope the rest of your day is Saisam awesome and filled with His presence and love and protection. Before I hand you over to Brother Raghu, I ask you to please be well, keep seeking and stay inspired. Sai Ram, and enjoy some bhajan bliss now.
Mahadeva Maheshwara Sai Narayana. Maheshwara.